Here is today's horoscope. Your star sign is Gemini, your lucky color is bruised apricot smoke, and your lucky number is 142. Today, you will awake with a man called Vernon Kay in your bed. Do not make him breakfast. Later, the echo of your footsteps will arrive before you. Pay attention to the rhythm. It knows things you don't. Someone close to you is not entirely themselves. A shard of their shadow has wandered off and will return at the least convenient hour. Be wary of mirrors. They are not always honest, though they pride themselves on accuracy. If you hear laughter with no clear source, smile politely. It may be for you, or about you, or neither.
Moth Hotel. In the near future, sleep will be optional, replaced by a thing called rest blocks, modular bursts of unconsciousness that you can schedule into your calendar like meetings. You'll book a 12-minute reboot and emerge blinking, refreshed, and ready to continue your decline. People will boast, "I only used 2 rest blocks today." Sleep will become shameful, like smoking indoors or having feelings. There'll be influencers live streaming their lucid intervals, selling sleep-adjacent products, synthetic dreams, curated fatigue, insomnia podcasts with luxury sponsors. By 2080, the rich will buy custom dream packages, curated fantasies designed to increase productivity. The poor will rent communal nightmares, overcrowded bunk dreams in shared servers, all static and dramatic chase scenes. Some will get trapped in subscription loops, dreaming endlessly of canceling their free trial. Scientists will claim this is progress. Fewer hours wasted, more life lived. But something vital will vanish. The ungoverned part of us that wanders, rearranging memories while we drool on the pillow. That strange nightly freedom will be gone, replaced by monetized unconsciousness. I sometimes imagine explaining sleep to future children. You used to close your eyes, and time skipped. You'd wake up slightly different, not better, not worse, just adjusted. They'll laugh and say, "Why would anyone give up control like that?" And I'll smile and think, "Because for 8 hours, every night, we were beautifully unproductive."
I shall now read the minutes of the previous meeting. Item 1. Discussion of the mysterious buzzing sound in the break room refrigerator. Some members claim it is mechanical, others insist it is ominous, and one suggested it might be a message from the leftover sushi. No consensus was reached. Item 2. Complaints regarding the new office plant's aggressive growth were discussed. It was recommended that the plant be rotated weekly, both for fairness and to prevent passive-aggressive leaf-flinging. Item 3. The committee debated whether email chains longer than 7 replies should be archived or ceremonially burned. After considerable deliberation, a vote was taken. The emails remain, but anyone caught replying with "per my last email" is heavily fined. Item 4. The janitor requested clarification on whether the hallway puddle is a maintenance issue or a subtle psychological test. The committee agreed to monitor it quietly. Item 4. Zachy Martin reported that 3 men had today drowned in the tin mine. We offered our sincere condolences. The meeting was then adjourned promptly, though several members were last seen staring suspiciously at the ceiling tiles. Employee of the week was Chiwetel Ejiofor.
"I'm Lily. I'm calling because a stranger in a long coat keeps following me, but only in reflective surfaces. Shop windows, puddles, polished cutlery, mirrors. I've never seen them in real life, just in reflections, always a few steps behind. At first, I thought it was a trick of the light. But now I notice details. The coat is frayed at the cuffs, The shoes are shiny but scuffed, and they always carry a small bundle wrapped in cloth. I've tried turning quickly. Nothing. I've tried covering mirrors. They appear in every shiny surface. The spoon while I eat breakfast, the screen of my phone, the faucet when I wash my hands. Yesterday, my reflection in a window stopped mimicking me and instead pointed to the street behind me. I turned. Nothing. Then, on my way home, I saw the same reflection in a puddle. Still following. My friends laugh when I describe it. They say I need sleep. Maybe I do, but the stranger knows things I don't. They stand patiently, silently judging, waiting for something. Sometimes I see them staring directly at me, though I know that's impossible. I think they're waiting for me to notice something. Something important. Something I've forgotten.
Welcome to Dinosaur Watch. I'm with me, Michaela Strachan. Our sighting this week, velociraptors, yes, plural. They are never alone. Five were spotted in an industrial estate outside Leeds, moving in synchrony beneath the sodium lamps, their shadows long and serrated. Physically, they are smaller than Hollywood promised, but unnervingly fast, sleek, and lithe, like knives learning to dance. Their plumage is oil black, dripping rain, yet they make no sound against the pavement. Their diet is not flesh, but keys. Car keys, house keys, skeleton keys. They pluck them from pockets, key bowls, and unsuspecting hands. Afterwards, doors remain locked forever, or sometimes never again. Its interests include dismantling filing cabinets and carrying manila folders into woodland, arranging them according to some private taxonomy. CCTV once caught a velociraptor burning photographs, always faces, never landscapes. I love dinosaurs.
I'm the head of security at Moth Hotel. Every shift begins with a roll call. I read from a list of guests' names that nobody remembers writing. The guests respond by standing in reception and blowing kisses at me. The old ladies are the worst. I also have to respond to infestations. There are a lot of infestations at Moth Hotel. Everything here is slightly alive.
Thank you for calling Moth Hotel Customer Services. Your call is important to us. Here are the answers to your three most likely questions. Question 1. Why does the elevator only go to floor 6? This is by design. Floor 6 contains the laundry and everything you have misplaced since childhood. Guests are free to retrieve items but must leave something equally cherished in exchange. Question 2. Do the moths bite? No, they merely taste you. Most guests describe it as flattering, if slightly melancholy. Should the tasting continue for more than 20 minutes, you may request a privacy screen. Question 3. What are the rules regarding sleepwalking? We encourage it. Our corridors were designed with nocturnal wanderers in mind. If you find yourself awakening in the library, please do not be surprised to discover that you've been added as the author of a slim, unsettling volume you do not recall writing.
Another building extension was added to Moth Hotel during the night. This new neoclassical addition has the air of a courtroom awaiting trial. A colonnade of marble, each pillar veined like bone under skin, runs the length of the new frontage. A pediment above depicts moths ascending toward a single flame, their wings chipped away as though centuries had eroded them. Though the carving is only hours old, inside, the proportions are mathematically severe. Symmetrical corridors, perfect cubes of rooms, an atrium where the echoes refuse to return your words in full. Guests who step into the new wing must leave behind one possession, ideally the object most difficult to part with. The abandoned items are stacked neatly at the lobby's edge. Rings, photographs, inhalers, children's shoes. Waiting, waiting. Though none are ever reclaimed, The suites are sparsely adorned. A marble bed, a table for two, though you're always alone, and curtains that never sway, though drafts are constant. Checkout occurs when the staff deem your tribute worthy. Until then, the stern-faced busts mounted in each hallway watch over you with unblinking suspicion, as if measuring your guilt.
Time for neuropsychology dumbed down for you with me, Angela Lansbury. Today's topic, mirror neurons. These are the brain's silent actors mimicking every emotion, action, and gesture you witness. Watch someone stub their toe and you flinch before pain even registers consciously. Laugh at a joke and your neurons chuckle along politely. Observe someone's triumph and a subtle spark of joy ignites inside you. It's empathy made microscopic, almost invisible, yet undeniably potent. Mirror neurons are elegant, invisible, slightly mischievous. They make theater thrilling, gossip irresistible, and cinema devastatingly affecting. Yet beware, prolonged exposure to misery, anger, or absurdity, and your neurons take it personally. They replay, rehearse, and sometimes exaggerate, leaving you haunted by feelings not originally your own. Life is a performance, and your brain is the dedicated understudy, tirelessly rehearsing scenes without applause. Mirror neurons are the reason humans bond, argue, and empathize, sometimes to our delight, sometimes to our quiet existential exhaustion. That is neural psychology. That is your brain's subtle, insistent sociality. That is the uncanny, invisible thread connecting you to everyone you ever watched, loved, or observed. Does anyone have any drugs?
Draw closer, my friend. I wish to whisper in your ear. The last person to touch the office photocopier left a paper jam and a passive-aggressive post-it note. Your neighbor mows the lawn precisely at 6:03 a.m. just to remind you he exists. And that parking ticket you ignored. The meter attendant is now emotionally invested. He told me to tell you that. By the way, if you walk past your fridge quietly tonight, it will appreciate the gesture. A kind refrigerator keeps its vegetables fresh, but a neglected fridge holds grudges.
Have you ever wanted to scream at the top of your lungs, but keep it classy? Introducing the Shoutless Megaphone. Just scream into it, and it politely transforms your voice into a delicate whisper. Perfect for yelling at your neighbors, scolding your boss, or shouting into the void without disturbing anyone. Shoutless Megaphone, for when you have everything to say, but nothing to give away.
In the conference room today, we are hosting the Committee for Lost Property. Each delegate carries a small box containing something they cannot remember losing. One of them opened their box and released a single sparrow, which promptly flew across the room and into a window. I do not understand the significance of this. The delegates speak in a language of hints, half-remembered anecdotes, and sideways glances. Their agenda is unclear. Are they cataloguing, reclaiming, or simply paying lip service to lost objects? The chairperson insists that the meeting should record every unlost object's potential for getting lost. During lunch, one delegate misplaced his fork and spent 20 minutes looking under the table, only to find it embedded in the ceiling. The room applauded enthusiastically when the fork dropped into his lap at precisely 12:47 p.m. This evening, the delegates are being entertained by a pavement artist dressed as a chimney sweep, if he can find his chalk.
There is a new object in the museum at Moth Hotel. It is a hat, wide-brimmed, woven of delicate black straw that frays at the edges, yet appears perfectly intact. Visitors note the interior always seems damp, though the museum's climate control reads entirely dry. When worn, the hat doesn't fit any head properly, yet the wearer reports a strange sensation, the sense of being observed, as though something watches their thoughts directly. Some have spoken of seeing events from decades past, faint memories, not their own. Others of hearing conversations that were never spoken. Attempts to remove the hat without assistance are met with resistance. It clings unnaturally, heavy and sentient. If forcibly removed, it returns the next day, perched on its stand, as if nothing happened. The accompanying card reads only, "For the one who forgot to remember." Scholars speculate on its origins. A lost heirloom, a remnant of some forgotten ritual, or perhaps a device designed to teach one to observe themselves from the outside. Visitors leave unnerved, sensing the hat is patient, as though waiting for someone who may never return, or for a memory that refuses to be recalled. This place gives me the willies.
Moth Hotel trading cards are still available to collect, but they are selling fast. Card number 582 is the lower library. Endless shelves stretch into shadow, stacked with books that have never been written, yet every page rearranges itself when read. The scent of ink and aged paper mixes with faint traces of long-lost keys and whispered secrets. Guests who attempt to remove a volume often find it heavier than expected, and upon opening, the text reads itself aloud in voices belonging to strangers, though strangely familiar, almost their own. Librarians drift silently through the aisles, their shadows moving in directions opposed to their bodies. And time is unreliable. A chapter may take a lifetime or mere seconds to read. Collectors prize this card for the way it whispers faintly when held, repeating fragments of forgotten knowledge or fictional titles that seem essential. Its edges often bear scuffs that no handling could explain, as if the library itself leaves marks. Placing the card on a table occasionally causes nearby printed text to shimmer, as though peering into another library entirely. Swapping it requires the promise of a secret, though no one can be certain whether the card will ever respect that promise. This card may be swapped for a pair of Y-fronts or a packet of fish fingers.
Broadsword calling Danny boy, broadsword calling Danny boy, I have lost my shoes again, I have lost my shoes again, over.
I'm Melton Thornaby. Welcome to Dial M for Merlot, though today we venture briefly into the world of distilled vanity, Louis XIII cognac, a spirit so ancient and so meticulously aged that it practically demands a valet and a small apology for your existence. On the nose, mahogany, yes, but also dried rose petals that have been pressed under law books. A faint smoke, perhaps, from a burnt fireplace in an abandoned chateau. There is something almost judicial about the aroma, as though it's ready to sentence you for every sin you've never confessed. Yes, I smell burnt rubber too. Not unpleasant, just disciplinary. On the palate, it arrives like an ambassador to your tongue. Figs, honeyed oak, and a whisper of orange peel aged in a banker's desk drawer. There is the faintest shadow of cigar smoke, mingled with the memory of velvet chairs that once heard state secrets. The texture, liquid satin, yet somehow educational. It coats the mouth as if correcting your pronunciation of French in real time. Mid-palate, honey, cognac-soaked dried cherries, something slightly metallic, like pressing a gold coin against your molars in a chapel. A subtle burn, not unpleasant, like mild moral panic. The finish, well, the finish is endless. You swallow, and it swallows you. Notes of spice, candied citrus, and faint, oppressive grandeur linger as if the universe itself is observing your manners. One sip, and you understand why they bottle it in decanters shaped like Florence Cathedral. Louis XIII is less a drink than an experience in personal accountability administered via oak and pearled glass. You do not finish this cognac, you merely endure it and learn from it, and perhaps, yes, repent slightly. a spirit so profound it might reasonably be served at the end of the world or before one's most disagreeable relatives arrive. The dog's bollocks.
I've been hearing the voices again. This one carries the texture of static from a dead radio station, stitched together with syllables. The tone is brittle, like someone trying very hard not to laugh during a funeral. The words are clipped, rehearsed, bureaucratic, as if read from a manual that no longer applies. It began with, "The paperwork is incomplete. Entire sections are missing. Where did you place the acknowledgments?" I told it I hadn't filled in any paperwork. The voice replied, "That's exactly the problem. You think it isn't paperwork because you never signed anything, but everything you touch today was already a form." Later the voice muttered, "We've filed extensions on your behalf. Unfortunately, they were denied. You'll need to bring the originals." When I asked what originals, it said, "We'll accept them folded, but not torn. It's not angry, not even insistent. Just procedural, coldly efficient in its administration of some unseen ledger. I suspect the rules were written long before I arrived, and the voice is merely ensuring I comply, whether or not I understand. I think the voice might be Michael Palin, or perhaps Judy Garland."
Here is a list of today's archaeological finds unearthed in the grounds of the Moth Hotel. A single brick engraved with the words, "Do not move." A VHS tape labelled "The End." A set of dentures still slightly warm. A snow globe containing only sand. A wallet containing no money, only feathers. A photograph of Moira Stewart. A child's tricycle with only one wheel. A feather quill pen plucked from the tail of an emu. And a pair of spectacles that can see everything except the moon.
I just watched the movie Frozen. It brought back terrible memories. I'd have only lasted 5 minutes in that damned ice castle. I have an aversion to ice.
Drug of the day today is noctivagaramine, prescribed for temporary misalignment of circadian curiosity. The pill is opaque indigo, slightly rough to the touch. According to the pamphlet, which folds in 21 directions, the capsule encourages exploration of unlikely thoughts at improbable times. Side effects include a strong sense that your shadow is trailing someone else, mild hallucinations of miniature dragons in kitchen cupboards, a sudden, irrational desire to greet all traffic cones politely, inexplicable knowledge of the birth dates of forgotten inanimate objects, occasional auditory hallucinations of distant typewriters clicking in rhythm with your heartbeat. Take once daily at sunset, with a small glass of water and the faint hope that tomorrow will be exactly as peculiar as today. Avoid using any objects that are capable of rolling or folding during this period.
In order to exit this podcast, please study this grid and tick every box that contains a Van der Graaff generator or a gravitational wave detector. Then answer the question, what is 7+3?
Moth Hotel was written and produced by Brian Luff. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Voice technology by 11 Labs. All celebrity voices were impersonated. Moth Hotel was a Sowerby and Luff production for Studio Senseless.
Moth Hotel keeps a ledger for those who wish to remain remembered. Write your name, your message, or your final thoughts to Moth Hotel at studiosenseless.com.